ladies and gentlemen, I take great pleasure in introducing
TheMagicWordPodcast.com.
Harry Houdini, October the 29th, 1914, Flatbush, New York.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for TheMagicWordPodcast.com. This is Halloween, the 98th anniversary of the death of Harry Houdini, and I do want to thank him for being so prescient to know so many years ago, exactly 110 years ago from the date of that. That was, his voice was recorded there on October the 29th in 1914, so there you go. 110 years ago when he was introducing the Magic Word podcast. So I got to say thank you very much, Harry, for being of such presence of mind to know that that was going to be coming 110 years later. So thank you very much. This week, we again are celebrating the final day in the month of Boo. We've been having a lot of fun during this last month. I know this has not been everyone's cup of tea when we've been going off into the deep end of some of these storytelling seance kind of bizarre types of things. But for those who have enjoyed it, I thank you. And for the rest of you, I thank you for sticking with it. And I hope that you did get something out of it, even though, again, that may not, as I said, be your cup of tea or something that you particularly follow nor enjoy nor do as part of your regular routine. But here we are on National Magic Day, as so founded by the SAM and by Harry Houdini. And we'll talk a little bit about that in this week's episode, but also the end of the National Magic Week here in the U.S. as well, which I guess is celebrated by the Society of American Magicians all over the world because it is an international organization. This week, we are going to be talking with John Cox, who is the ultimate authority, in my opinion, on Harry Houdini. He's been doing a daily blog on Houdini called wildabouthoudini.com. Actually, he calls it Wild About Harry, but that website was already taken, so he goes with wildabouthoudini.com. And he always finds new things to talk about, which is why I thought it's interesting to come back to him from year to year and say, hey, what's new with Houdini? What? Because you're the guy. You know what's happening. And not only that, but to talk about seances, because today is Halloween, and there will be many seances. And in fact, as you're listening to this, one of the things we were talking about in this episode was about the original, or maybe it's the official, I always get those mixed up, I guess, seances that are conducted by Dorothy Dietrich and Dick Brooks. Before you go any further, if you're interested in that and you're listening to this then this morning, as this is coming out, you might want to see if you can get into the seance because it's going to begin later this morning. Actually, they're supposed to open up the room sometime around 12:30 Eastern time, Eastern Standard Time here in the U.S. And if you just will send a quick email to seance@houdini.org, they should be able to send you a link. If you can't reach them, you can then send me an email. I'll be watching my emails here this morning and send those to scott@themagicwordpodcast.com. I'll be looking for your email so I can send you that link just in case you won't be able to reach Dorothy because she and Dick are really going to have their hands full trying to get this thing ready in a few hours. I don't believe it's going to be posted somewhere that you can listen or watch it at a later time. It's done in real time. And it does go on for quite some time. I believe it's last time I attended, it went for about 3 hours or longer. Anyhow, if you're interested, again, that's going to be the seance that's conducted by Dorothy Dietrich and Dick Brooks there in Scranton, Pennsylvania at the Houdini Museum. This week, while we're talking with John Cox, he does tell us a lot of interesting background about the seances, about the ones that were conducted by Bess Houdini and then later by other people up to today and the people who are doing it officially and historically, I guess, as well as a few others who are doing seances in their own hometowns and different places. It's kind of interesting to know that after Bess Houdini was finished, there were a couple of other people, noted figures, that is Ferry Blackstone Sr. and Dunninger, who both were doing seances in order to get additional publicity as well back during that time. Anyhow, a lot of really cool things that we talk about here, not just on seances, because I'm sure after the last couple of weeks, you're probably tired of hearing about seances, but we do get a lot into Houdini, certainly, and about some of the history and some little-known things, perhaps, that, of course, John knows about, but I did not know as much about until he informed and elucidated me on a lot of these areas. And I'm sure that you'll get a lot out of this too. It's really a lot of fun. So I'm going to step aside and let you enjoy the conversation we have here this week, talking about what's new with Houdini with our guest, John Cox, here on The Magic Word.
Coming up on 14 years, John Cox has been the blogger for Wild About Houdini. It was Wild About Harry, but apparently that was already taken because of the song. So anyhow, Wild About Harry has been something that he blogs about on a daily basis, meaning that there is something always new to find out about Harry, which I think is just phenomenal. And it's incredible also the stuff that he does uncover. And it's very interesting. It's not like that he's beating a dead horse with things over and over that you've already heard, but there's something new all the time that's coming out. And as we are, of course, approaching the anniversary of Houdini's death on Halloween, I think there's nobody better person to talk with about that because of the seances that are going to be going on around the world. We talk about that and so many other different things. So I know he's been involved with some stuff, and we're going to find out what's new with Houdini. Hey there, John Cox. How you doing, man?
Hello, Scott. Good to see you. Happy Halloween season. Or happy seance season, I should call it.
That's right. This is getting into the final week of Boo, in which we have the day of Houdini's death designated as National Magic Day by the Society of American Magicians. They've been doing that for, I don't know what, ever since he died? Or when did they come and start doing that? Do you have any idea?
I do. I think it started, gosh dang it, I just found this out, because it started at a PCAM convention in San Jose. Mm-hmm. And that might have been 1938, but it was there that they declared, we're going to, you know, make Halloween National Magic Day. Not since his death, but a little, so a little time after.
Was that long about the time that Edward Saint had stopped doing the seances?
Well, they did the seances until 1936, the 10th seance, and then they called it a wrap.
Okay.
Interestingly, they did try and talk Saint and Bessie into doing a seance in San Jose, because that's where the Winchester Mystery House is. So they said, we should have a seance at the Winchester Mystery House. And it was even announced in the Magic magazines that this was going to happen. And it was going to be a big deal, but it never happened.
Why was that? Do you have any idea?
I don't know, but I think maybe Bess and Ed Saint just decided, no, we were serious when we said it was over at 10 years, and no, we'll do something else. And what they did instead to honor Houdini was announce National Magic Day.
Which is what the Society of American Magicians had done, you said, during the PCAM convention, I guess, that particular year. But Bess had decided at that point, he has not come back, and so we're not going to continue with that. Is that right?
Yeah, Bess wrapped it up. The final Houdini seance was final as far as she was concerned. Mm-hmm. Now, there are people that say, oh, she handed it off to me. Maybe she did that privately. But I think she was happy to, you know, prove the point that Houdini wasn't coming back. And Bess famously said, and I'm not coming back either. She says, even if I can, I'm not going to come.
That's funny. I'd not heard that before. Yeah. But what's interesting, I think, further is that she had, I think, famously said one time that she did hear from him or did have the right word or something about believe that was in the envelope or something, then later recanted. Is that correct? Or can you tell me that story?
Oh, boy, that's a quagmire. And it happened shortly, in 1920. End of 1928 into 1929, Bessie hooked up with a gentleman named Arthur Ford, and he was the head of a spiritualist church, and he was a charmer. And now the story that Bess's sister told to Doug Henning, and Doug Henning told this on a talk show, was that Bess and Arthur Ford were sort of involved. And this was right after Houdini's death. Bess was having a hard time. She was drinking pretty heavily, and she was very worried about money. And Arthur Ford was also a big drinker, and they were out enjoying themselves. And he said, listen, why don't you give me the code word? We'll have a seance. It'll be big news. We'll go on tours, and you'll never have to worry about romance or money again. And in a moment of weakness, Bess agreed. When she sobered up the next day, she said, oh my God, we're not doing that. And Arthur Ford said, yes, we are doing it.
Wow.
They had the seance. Bess may have attempted suicide at that point as well.
Wow.
They had the seance. Bess said, sure. And it was the code word. She did tell him it. And then the whole thing blew up the next day in the tabloids that it was faked. And Bessie was able to pull herself together and pull herself out of that situation. And she got her health back and you know, found a much better man in Edward Saint when she moved to California. And so, you know, later on, she never spoke directly to that seance, but she just said, Houdini has never come back to me in any legitimate form.
And that's when she said, I'm washing my hands of it, I'm done, and we're moving on. And someone else said,
they arranged the big finale, the big grand finale, 1936, top of the Knickerbocker Hotel in Hollywood, the final Houdini seance. And
it said that he did come back, possibly from the standpoint that there was rainstorm that happened immediately after that or something that was kind of like, that's unusual.
That's the story. The story is after she, you know, signed off, she said, you know, Houdini has not come back, and I now turn out the light. The seance was over, and suddenly out of a clear sky, it said a rainstorm happened and drenched everyone on the roof and then moved on. And that kind of a rainstorm in Southern California is pretty unusual. So the speculation is maybe that was Houdini's way of announcing himself and coming back.
Now, there have been successors after that, I say, like Sid Radner and others who have done seances over the years, who kind of feel as if that they had been tapped out, I guess, or said, okay, by Bess Houdini, that you can do this, and then it's kind of continued down through generations. Isn't that right, too?
I did a blog post. I haven't read it in a little while, so I'm just going to have to try and remember, called The Secret Origin of the Official Houdini Seance, or The Secret Origin of the Annual Houdini Seance. Bess calls it quits in 36. And again, maybe it happens privately, but I don't think she's interested in anyone carrying it on, although people can if they want. But no one does, as far as I know. In 1946, there's a group of magicians, Irmo Fox is involved in this, in Detroit, I think, who said, let's do a 10-year anniversary of the final Houdini seance in 1936. They just thought, wouldn't it be fun to do a Halloween Houdini seance? And this gets noticed by the press, and there's just sort of this explosion of press. They get a lot of publicity that magicians are gathering to hold a Houdini seance 10 years after the last failed attempt. They get lots of press. They have the seance. Houdini doesn't come back, but boy, that gets noticed, and it gets noticed by Blackstone, and it gets noticed by Dunninger, who love a little press themselves. And, you know, they're the biggest magicians of the time. And so when Halloween 1947 rolls around, Blackstone and Dunninger are doing annual Houdini seances. And that's really where the idea of the annual Houdini seance starts. Blackstone does it because it's just guaranteed press. And everyone's kind of, you know, beginning to kind of claim legitimacy, saying, oh, well, this tracks back to the original pact and all that. But Blackstone does it for like 10 years or so, but Dunninger carries on and does it a few times with a group in New York that includes Walter Gibson and Sidney Radner is there in that group. And eventually kind of the disparate groups who are doing annual Houdini seances kind of coalesce more or less around Dunninger. And that kind of becomes the one Houdini seance. And then Sid Radner, really, who was involved in it from early on, he really kind of takes the reins, I think, in the 70s and formalizes it, and literally formalizes it, trademarks the name, the Official Houdini Seance. And then he really carries it on very steadily. Oh boy, we're getting all into the seance stuff. However, in the 70s, so Sid kind of deciding, well, I'm going to carry this forward as the Official Houdini Seance. And one of the seances they have is at the Magic Townhouse in New York with Dorothy Dietrich and Dick Brooks.
Right.
And Walter Gibson is there and the whole gang is there. And Walter says to Dorothy, this was great. You should be carrying on the Houdini Seance. And Dorothy says, I will. So they have also been carrying on a Houdini seance. They call theirs the Original Houdini Seance. They also sort of believe that it tracks back to Bess and Hardine. And so there's an interesting little split that happens there. And Dorothy and the Official Houdini Seance has been very, very regular.
One at this point, you mean the Dorothy Dietrich one or the other one?
It gets confusing, and it's supposed to be.
Okay.
Official is Sidney Radner.
Okay.
Original is Dorothy and Dick.
Okay.
So there are two Houdini seances, the official Houdini seance, the original Houdini seance.
I understand
seance.
The dichotomy there, yeah.
And, you know, and they're carrying them on. Of course, Sid Radner passed away, and now his son Bill Radner is carrying it forward. So many seances, and Houdini hasn't found time to make it to any of them.
He's a little busy, I guess, whatever he is, what he's doing. Yeah. I guess. Now, you had an idea then also, this year would have been perfect for having a seance where? There in California?
Well, the official Houdini seance, and that's Bill Radner now and Tom Bolt, made the mistake a few years back of asking me for ideas of where I think it would be fun to do Houdini seances, because they do them in a different part of the country, and usually with some tie-in to Houdini. And so I was like, oh, baby, I'll give you some ideas, none of which they've used. But the one that I said, here's what you guys got to do, man. I was pushing hard for this. Have the official seance 2024 at the Winchester Mystery House. Do your listeners know what the Winchester Mystery House is? Should I explain it?
I think you should. I know what that is, and I know how it was built and Miss Winchester and all that, and et cetera. But I think you should explain, because there are going to be some people who don't.
I'm no expert on it, but the Winchester Mystery House is a famous landmark in San Jose, California. And the story is Sarah Winchester, who was the heiress of the Winchester rifle fortune, she believed in spiritualism. And the spirits told her that as long as she kept building her house, she had this large house, as long mm-hmm. as she kept building the house, either she would never die or the spirits would be happy. Sometimes it's said that vengeful spirits who were killed by Winchester rifles wouldn't get angry. I'm actually not sure of the real thing, but she believed that as long as she kept building the house, she would be pleasing the spirits. So she never stopped building this house. And this house just is this giant, sprawling, crazy thing with rooms that make no sense and stairways that go nowhere. And it's just, there's no better example of spiritualism run amok than the Winchester Mystery House. So she died in the early 1920s, and 1924 is when Houdini is touring the country with his anti-spiritualism lecture, his lecture exposing the methods of fraudulent spirit mediums. And he comes to San Jose October 29th, 1924, gives the lecture, and there's an SAM member there who happens to work at the Winchester Mystery House, which is really just opened as a tourist attraction. And Houdini gets a midnight tour of the Winchester Mystery House, October 29th, going into October 30th.
Wow.
So Houdini is there. Houdini is there almost to the day of Halloween, 100 years ago. So what a perfect place to have an official seance. You're going to be in the spot where Houdini was. He found the house fascinating. And, you know, the house would have given everyone a midnight tour, but it's not going to happen. It is too bad. Very selfishly, I just wanted to have a great 2024 Winchester Mystery House experience, but I ended up having that anyways. Out of the blue, I went and I filmed a television show up there, and I got a very close to midnight tour, and they showed me some of the Houdini artifacts that they have that aren't on display. So I got my 100-year Winchester Mystery House Houdini experience, but I was thinking that was a good idea to do a seance at. Instead, they're doing it in Appleton, Wisconsin, which is still great. Going back to the roots, doing it Houdini's hometown. It's always they always do a Rolls-Royce job.
I know, like when you and I were involved, the one there in Fort Worth, when we were there at Arthur Moses' home and then had the thing at the Scottish Rite Temple, that was just crazy off the hook. That was just an amazing experience. What an evening.
That was great. That was great. And you were the medium.
Yeah.
And that Masonic temple was wild. And, that was something. Yeah. And that's how they do it. Sometimes they'll get together with someone who's interested in putting together a seance, and they'll build, if it's a public seance, they'll build a whole kind of evening around it, a magic show or lecture, and kind of culminating with a seance. The seance is private this year, but a lot of the years they open them up. I did that one in Fort Worth, and then I did one in San Francisco, which I really enjoyed as well.
And typically you said they do this, and again, we're going to the official, not the historic. We'll get to the historic one in just a moment. But as to the official one, they have that just around the U.S. They really haven't taken that overseas yet, have they?
They did They did several they did once. I think they went to London once.
Okay.
I think.
And why there? I guess they could be anywhere in the world. It's kind of like, hey, these guys just want to go on a vacation someplace, I guess, who are kind of the core group.
Yeah, yeah.
I know they like being together.
They do. And they were talking about doing Copenhagen this year, which would have been a really interesting choice.
Why? But what did he do in Copenhagen?
Well, he had the worst day of his life in Copenhagen.
What? Okay, this sounds like a story.
Yeah, no, 1913. 1913, Houdini goes and he's going to do a tour of Scandinavia for the first time. And then he's going to travel through France. And he gets there and he does one performance at a theater in Copenhagen, which is still stands. And at a press event the next day, he gets handed a telegram and he learns, actually, he had the telegram. That's when he opened a telegram to learn that his mother had died. And he fainted dead away. And when he came to, the theater manager allowed him to break that contract and he raced home. And never completed that tour. So this building, which is a theater in Copenhagen, is where Houdini learned his mother had died, where Houdini had the worst moment of his entire life. And they're like, great, let's do a seance there. Like, oh, not the Winchester Mystery House? You sure?
So
he liked the Winchester Mystery House. I think he would not be returning to that theater.
Right. Well, so there was no truth to the thing that was in the movie. I want to say it was the original one with the 57 movie of Houdini with Tony Curtis when he was under the ice and he heard his mother's voice and that was when she had died. Is that right?
Yeah, the 53 movie.
53,
yeah,
sorry.
That they have her die when he's having his under the ice episode, which is also Halloween. You know, that movie really layers it on. It's like the trapped under the ice. That happens on Halloween. And his mother died on Halloween?
Yeah.
Boy, you're going all in on that. Yeah, that's how.
And then he died in water torture as well on Halloween.
On Halloween, yeah. But, you know, they set it up. That's as Best says in the movie, that's not your day. Right about that. But well, no. He Mama died. That was a tragedy. Mama died while he was crossing. And when he arrived in Europe, there were a bunch of telegrams waiting for him because all during his crossing, Hardin was dealing with Mama. She had a stroke. And, you know, they're sending telegrams to Houdini telling him what's going on. And so when he arrives, there's all these telegrams waiting, but he thinks they're just, you know, welcome to Europe telegrams. And so he just puts them in his pocket. He doesn't really get to them until, you know, he has to rush off, get to Copenhagen, and he performs and he doesn't even look at them until a day later. And that's when must have been horrible. That's when he realizes, oh my gosh, not only is she dead, but they've been trying to notify me. And yeah, what a.
How long did it take back then to do an ocean crossing?
Four days.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't that much. It was like 4 days. 4 days. I should know this because I just gave that talk at the Magic Collectors Conference all about Houdini's ocean voyages, and I had this down. And in fact, Houdini was on a ship that made at the time the record crossing, and so it was just under four days.
Okay,
I think
going to the historic seance, the one that Dorothy Dietrich and Dick Brooks does,
the original.
The original, not the historic, original one. So they always seem to do that online, or it's always done there in Pennsylvania at their place. They never take that on the road, do they?
They, you know what? A few years back, they did it in New York. There's a restaurant in New York, which used to be the boarding house where the Houdinis, where the Weiss family lived when they first came to New York. And that restaurant is still there. And they had the seance there 1 year. So sometimes they usually stay in the region, but sometimes they'll take it on the road. And when they can't, they'll still do it in the museum. And they've been kind of pioneers in doing it online.
Right. And I know by doing it online, they've invited the world, basically, whoever wants to come in and sit in on the Zoom seance, they can.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the past. So it sounds like that they're not going to be taking your suggestion here this year as to where they're going to be having this, but that sounds like that would have been a great place to have had that. The Winchester House also was a subject of a movie.
I've never seen that. I keep thinking I've got to find that and I've got to watch that.
It's just okay.
Kind of more of a, it was kind of a horror movie. You saw it?
Yeah, I've seen it. And
did they mention Houdini at all?
Not that I recall. It's been some years since I've seen it. And if they did, it must have been just in passing. But it was supposed to be, I guess, a horror film, but there was really nothing. It was more of a mystery film, I guess, more mysterious. It's kind of like that she might see some spirits or something. I honestly don't remember the premise of it, but and I don't remember the name of it particularly.
I think it was just called Winchester.
Winchester. Right? Winchester. Well, as I mentioned at the top of this podcast, as far as what's new with Houdini, so what's new? What have you found out? Oh, before I get into that, and we're talking about movies and television, what is the show that you were on and when's it going to be coming out?
You know, I probably shouldn't say because they haven't announced anything about it, but it's well known. It's a well-known show and
60
and
minutes.
It was a hoot, but you know, I don't know what the rules are that I don't say anything about it until
it's already out.
It's not already out. I mean, you know, I don't know when it,
I mean, you can't talk about it probably until it is out. That's what I'm saying.
Or until they begin to promote it.
Sure. Got it.
And make sure that I'm in it. Maybe I'm not in it. I might have been cut out.
So, again, as I mentioned at the top of the podcast over here, there's always something new. What have you found? What's new with Houdini?
Oh, my gosh. You know, lots of, I don't want to say small stuff, because, you know, I'm deep in the weeds with Houdini. So the smallest thing excites me. I've gotten to a point where, you know, I'm building this massive chronology, which I'm going to publish as three giant books. Mm-hmm. And so I've gotten to a point where it's pretty unusual for me to find an engagement that he played that I didn't already know about, or a suspended straitjacket escape that I didn't already know about. So when that happens, it's Christmas, you know. It's like, I can't believe it, but I am filling it in. I am filling in his whole life. So, and you know what? I'm not going to find it all. I'm still finding new things, especially, you know, because a big benefit, just the newspapers.com and all these online archives, they're always updating. And sometimes they'll just upload a whole new paper that's never been online, and that will be the mother load. Because what I've found is that, you know, Houdini, especially when he did a suspended straitjacket, he would tie in specifically with one paper. Hmm. And because he did that, none of the other papers would report on it. So you could be looking for, and this happened with Los Angeles, you know, it was said he did a suspended straitjacket escape in Los Angeles in 1915, but there's nothing about it in the LA Times. There's nothing about it in the Herald. I was really beginning to doubt that this had happened. How could there be nothing in any of the major Los Angeles papers? Well, it was because he tied in with a smaller paper called The Express. And I actually went down to the library in LA and looked at the old microfilm Express file. And oh my God, it's front page news every single day. It was just it's like, oh, okay. And I'm finding that's the case. Sometimes you can't learn about what Houdini did until you find the paper that he tied in with.
And I guess some of these times the newspapers might be found in someone's home who has passed away, and they've just been a hoarder and kept newspapers, and then they give them to somebody and they kind of go through and say, oh, we don't have these. And they start scanning them, putting them in their archive, I guess.
You know, good idea. I don't know. I don't know if it's just newspapers giving them archives or it's a good question, but yeah. It never stops. And it also goes away. Warning researchers. This is the internet. There's stuff that I found on those archives that's gone. There's whole files of newspapers that are gone that were there. Nothing sticks around. So
I don't understand that. They could have a server that can hold everything.
Yeah. I wonder if, you know, a certain paper gave them a limited amount of time license on it, or decided we want to have an archive on our own website, so we're taking this back. I don't know, but things that were there are no longer there. And so, yeah, not, you know, I think people are learning that with streaming. You kind of think, oh, this is great, I've got it forever. No, you don't. You know, the Indiana Jones movies are now taken off Disney Plus. The internet, things disappear. And, you know, if I disappear, my blog disappears. So, Scott, it's time to get it into books.
We do need to do that.
I've got it print. I've got it, you know, I've come around. I've been the internet guy, and I am the first person to tell you, boy, it's got to be in a book, or else it's not permanent.
I want to talk about the books in just a minute, but before we do, I recently at our local Magic meeting at the International Brotherhood of Magicians local ring, there was a gentleman, Bert Rosenbluth, who was doing some research and gave us a short talk. He gives us a history lecture each month. And this month it was about Houdini, talking about his experience in Germany and the lawsuit they had against the newspaper for slander.
Oh, yeah.
And I was trying to think of the name of the attorney who, I guess, had represented him. But basically, I had not heard this story before about how that this guy apparently was kind of hate. I mean, he was truly Houdini's adversary for like a whole year, and he was trying everything he could to dispel him. And as I understand, which I thought was weird at the time, in Germany, their laws did not allow for people to commit fraud, meaning you can't even do magic because you purport to do something and you're really doing sleight of hand. So therefore, it's illegal. We can put you in jail. It was just very weird. I guess you're aware of
all that. I would have loved to have heard this talk because, I mean, it sounds like what you're describing is the trial in Cologne with the policeman, Warner Graf.
That's him. That's the guy.
And okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of a famous incident in Houdini's early career. He had that beautiful poster made,
yes,
which sort of spells it out and has himself in his tuxedo in this giant courtroom.
Which never appeared in the newspaper. He fabricated all of that, correct? The picture.
Well, the visual. I doubt. Okay. I mean, we don't know. I doubt the room was that impressive. You know, it's this massive room with all these helmeted policemen and a bust of the Kaiser, and he's in his tuxedo. I'm sure that image is enhanced, but it all really happened. He absolutely went to trial and had to prove himself by escaping from Werner Graf's lock.
Handcuffs, right.
Yeah. I've, you know, that story, you read it in the biography and it's one version, and Silverman kind of found some new info, but you know, David Copperfield has this incredible file. And it's called the Cologne Papers, and it's Houdini assembled. It's a whole portfolio, and it's all these court documents and a record of everything. It's all in German, and apparently it's in like an old German legalese, but it has been transcribed. At least some of it's been transcribed, and so I've read through it. That, combined with some other things that I've found, it's sort of a different story than what's come down. I'm definitely telling that story in my upcoming books because it is a little bit different. I would have loved to have seen his lecture. Very, very quickly though, yeah, it was Houdini and Graf. It was originally a challenge, and Graf had developed a lock that he wanted to patent.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea was Houdini was going to escape from it. You know, I'm not going to try.
He changed key locks or something?
It's pretty convoluted, but yeah, it's a little convoluted, but it all started with a challenge. And Houdini beat the lock, but then Grass said that, no, when we met, he offered me a bribe, and Houdini said he's a dirty rat, and it's very tangled.
And as I understand, towards the end of that, he had lost the lawsuit, Graf had. He then appealed, lost on appeal, and appealed again and lost again, like after a third time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He wouldn't give up.
Wouldn't relent.
And Houdini made the most of it. It was, you know, right down to that poster. But Houdini won. But here's what a lot of people, you know, the Tony Curtis movie sort of mythologizes it well. People think that Houdini was taken to court for being a fraud. No, Graf was a defendant. Houdini was suing Graf. Houdini took Graf to court for writing an article in which Graf said Houdini is a fraud because he offered me a bribe. And so Houdini was suing Graf for slander.
Not for libel. That was what I thought.
Not for libel.
Yeah.
It says slander. It should be libel because it was in print, but it's right. Always written up as being slander. And so that was the charge. And Houdini did win, although Houdini had to pay a fine for calling Graf a bad name on stage. You're not supposed to insult a police officer. So actually, the first verdict was Graf lost, but Houdini also had to pay a fine for insulting a police officer,
which was illegal at the time. For you can't insult a police officer Period. Yeah, whether on stage or anywhere, I guess.
Yeah, what did Houdini said? He said it in German. He yelled it out on stage. Because, yeah, the challenge is really interesting. And the challenge is the thing that you never hear, that they had kind of arranged to do this. And then Graf showed up and he tried to switch the lock on Houdini. And Houdini, and once Houdini escaped, Graf said that he had broken it. And it's a, yeah, I don't want to try and remember. I went all through this and I figured it all out. And I finally said, oh, this is how the story is laid out. I've never actually done a blog post about it. And I finally tried to tell kind of this story in the way that it actually happened. And it sounded like this gentleman did the same thing with the lecture. It is very interesting.
He did. Maybe I can get him in touch with you or you in touch with him to kind of give you his notes on that. That sounds like something that if Copperfield has got that in his transcripts or someplace in the library, I know that you get there from time to time to do research and work with him on some other projects. Perhaps that could be something that's going to be a chapter for the book.
Well, it is. It already is.
Yeah.
And I did. I did look all those papers over.
Yeah.
But like I said, most of them are in German, but there is something there that I can't figure out. I'm like, who didn't you write this? Is this a transcription of his German assessment of the trial? And I think maybe it is. So you're still sort of just getting it from Houdini's point of view.
Speaking of Copperfield's collection, we've talked about this before also, and that is the Edison roles of Houdini's voice. And I think his sister also, or who was it that was, or his wife, or who, somebody else was on one of them.
Did we talk about this?
Well, you and I did personally, but I mean, when I was over visiting with you one time, you were showing those to me and
you're a lucky man.
Very.
You're one of the few people that has seen those things outside of David Copperfield's museum.
Yes. But as I recall, they weren't all in his voice. There was somebody else's voice also that was one of the recordings.
Yeah. Well, that's the big deal. There are three wax cylinders of Houdini's voice, the only voice recordings in existence. Two is Houdini giving his water torture cell patter.
And that's available, you can hear on YouTube.
Well, what you're listening to on YouTube is they've taken these 2-3.5 minute water torture cell speeches that he's doing, and they've edited together just a little minute something audio clip using lines from each recording. This was put together for a documentary in the 1990s. So what you're hearing are just a few lines taken from these two longer recordings. The two longer recordings aren't available anywhere. But the one that's really exciting is the cylinder that has Houdini and his sister reading a poem attributed to their father in German. So it's Houdini speaking German. And this was never transferred. Now, these were discovered in 1970, and at the time, they made recordings of the two water torture cell cylinders, but they didn't record the German cylinder. In fact, it was sort of forgotten, but I could see in the old newspaper articles from 1970s that the reporter talks about, there were two different water torture cell speeches, and then another cylinder that has him and his sister reading a poem in German.
Mm-hmm.
Like, where is that? And so it's a long, tangled story, but Mr. Copperfield, being Mr. Copperfield, found that very exciting that he had that and that it hadn't been properly documented or transferred. And he allowed Mike Caveney and I to make fresh transfers from the three original wax cylinders. They were still good. And we got new recordings of the two water torture cell speeches in much better quality. And we heard and transferred the never heard German cylinder. And that was just the most exciting Houdini restoration preservation project I've ever been involved in.
Because not only was it in his own voice, but it was also his own conversational tempo of how he normally would talk.
It's more so than the water torture cell speech. You know, if you listen to that clip on YouTube, And it's always been a little bit of a debate. Is that how he really talked, or is that his stage voice?
I always thought that was just his stage voice because it sounded so much like this, that he was talking out loud to enunciate every syllable.
Totally.
Yeah.
Although at the time when the original group of people in 1970, someone was there who knew Houdini. And as soon as that cylinder started, he said, that's him. that's Houdini.
Wow.
Apparently, that is pretty much how Houdini talked. And in on the sister one, he's still talking in that way. It's a little faster. It's a little more natural, but he's still talking in that way. Although there's this, there's one moment that's the most natural where he comes back on. His sister does the poem in German, and then Houdini comes back on and he says, "In case you did not understand it, I shall speak it myself." That he says pretty quickly, and I'm like, "That's it. That's it."
Yeah.
That's Houdini's voice right there. But it's still very, he hits every syllable.
And those are in Copperfield's collection, and those are not things that he is releasing or putting out there for anybody at this point.
Those are, I mean, the point of it was we wanted to get it preserved, get them off those wax cylinders, so those never need to be put on a machine again, and preserved as digital media with proper backups, so they exist. And not available now, but I'm sure Copperfield will share them when the opportunity presents itself. I don't know what that is yet, but they can be heard, and that's they exist. That wasn't the case before last year. So I think eventually people will hear them.
When we were at the Collectors Expo, and you referred to that a little bit earlier, one of the things you talked about was this book, which you've already alluded to here earlier as well. And that's going to be an ongoing, sounds like a major project, and something that's going to be quite a while before that actually comes to fruition. Can you give me any background on what's happening or when it might come out and what's going to be in it?
Well, I shouldn't talk about my next books. Let's talk about the book you're talking about that I talked about at Magic Live.
Magic Live, was that it? Okay, I thought it was the Expo. Okay.
Yeah, I mentioned it at the Expo, but I gave a presentation on it at Magic Live, and that's the Houdini Diary book.
That was it. Sorry, was it live? Yep.
Right. So what that is Dr. Bruce Averbuch, big collector, Bruce.
In Cleveland.
He owns Houdini's first travel diary. It covers the years 1897 to 1899. It's extraordinary. It covers these fascinating years of his early struggling days. So this is Houdini in dime museums and circuses and medicine shows and experimenting with spiritual. It's a remarkable, remarkable artifact. And Bruce got together with Mike Caveney and said, let's publish this as a book so the world can have this. And they invited me to read through it, figure out what it said, and annotate it.
It was hard right there to read what it said because his handwriting was horrible.
It's all in Houdini's handwriting. And yeah, Houdini's handwriting is not great, but also the book is very small, and Houdini is just writing
like
in a very
diary.
Small space. Yeah, it's actually a date book. It's the theatrical date books that would be put out, and if you were a performer on the road, you would get these little date books to keep track of your gigs. Mm-hmm. And Houdini sort of used it as a diary. He kept track of his gigs, but he also just would write little memos and little what happened and. It's just jam-packed, and it's fascinating. So, yeah, I was able to decipher Houdini's handwriting, and also just, he's writing kind of for himself. So he's abbreviating, and he's just sometimes initialing something. But I kind of, because I have this chronology, I know what he's talking about here. And so I've not just annotated it. I've really kind of fleshed out the story. And then we reached out to Copperfield and other collectors to see what material they had that relates to this year. And Michael Albright, who you may know, he's the very talented graphic designer who does all the design for the Magic Castle. He's designing the book. So it's going to be this big, beautiful 350-page coffee
Wow.
table book.
Wow.
Every page of the diary is reproduced in color. You're going to be able to see it. You've got my annotations. You've got material from some of the biggest Houdini collections in the world worked in there, images of Houdini you've never seen. And it's just a fabulous way to tell the story of these early years. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And that's going to be coming out when?
Well, guess what? Michael is finished with the design. We have a fully designed book, and Michael and I we're going back and forth a little bit because we're tweaking it, but we're still adding. We're still like, oh man, okay, well, I've got something else to put in. probably early next year. I think we're probably on track to having it out early next year. The printing process takes quite a while. That's the wild card. That can take 2 to 3 months. And so I could see us shipping that off to the printers late November, December. So I think we're on track for it to be released next year.
So you're not looking at necessarily trying to coordinate this with Houdini's birthday or his death day necessarily?
No, I think everyone, we want it out as soon as it's ready. I hope it, there'll be no waiting. As soon as it's ready, it will be released. And I'll keep everyone posted on my blog and on my Patreon, especially. I'll give everyone an early heads up. Because I don't know how many that Mike is going to print. Mike Caveney is publishing it. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows he does
limited runs.
Limited runs, and there's going to be a special edition. And yeah, it's going to be special.
And the other book you were talking about that's going to take a little bit longer, that's going to be the several volume book. Is that going to be essentially all of your blogs in one place? Or are you going to elaborate on each of the ones, go back on each of them? Or what's the plan on that?
Nope, not my blog. My blog's my blog. These are different. As I said, I've been doing this chronology and doing the diary book. It's really been eye-opening and interesting.
From a publishing point of view, you mean, about how much effort it takes?
More just in how to tell Houdini's story. There's a lot of biographies out there. But with the diary book, because it's a diary, it dictates the form. And the form is, let's take Houdini week by week, event by event, and tell it in order. So you're just traveling along with him. And I thought, boy, this is a great way to tell Houdini's story. Why don't I just continue it doing it that way? So the important thing is
it was his early years too, isn't that right? Mostly?
Well, the diary covers 97 to 99. Yeah. Yeah. So you're traveling
kind of his unknown years. At that point, he was not really doing the escape act. He was still being a magician and the king of cards, I guess.
He's doing the handcuffs.
Oh, was he? Okay.
Yeah, he's doing it all. He's doing cards. He's doing magic. He's doing handcuffs.
He's trying to find his footing.
Well, they know their acts. Metamorphosis cards, Second Sight, Bessie Sings. At that time, you go into a dime museum, you go into a circus, and it's like, hey, look, here's all the stuff I can do. What do you need? What do you like? Mm-hmm. Forget the handcuffs, do the magic. So they would do, Metamorphosis was really the thing that was the crowd pleaser. But it was whatever the venue needed. And hey, if you want both, Houdini would sometimes in a dime museum do his King of Cards act in the curio as a platform act, while Bessie would sing on another platform, and then they would do Metamorphosis together mm-hmm. in the theater. So, they were like whatever, and then they would get paid for those different things. So it wasn't, people like to think that, he starts as this and then he becomes this and then he becomes this. Kind of out of the gate, he's multiple things and it's mm-hmm. whatever you want. But that was sort of the problem. And that's, as the story goes, Martin Beck takes a look at him and says, handcuffs and Metamorphosis. Make that into a tight vaudeville turn. That works. And Houdini agreed, by the way. And so that's what he becomes. So he finds his act, when he hits the vaudeville stage, where you have to hone, do a tight, unless you're a headliner, headliner gets 30, 40 minutes. But in the beginning, Houdini's act was probably not much more than 10 minutes. So, handcuffs and Metamorphosis.
So as I understand it also, going back around that time in 1893 for the Columbian Exposition, the Chicago World's Fair, essentially, he did not perform, but he did go and attend, I guess, and saw some other acts. Is that correct? But he was not actually a performer.
No, they performed at the Chicago World's Fair in 1893. That's when he was performing with Jacob Heyman as the Brothers Houdini.
Okay.
So, before he met his wife, he did a partner act with Jacob Heyman, and then later with his own brother, who became Hardeen, and doing Metamorphosis. And so, no, they were performing there.
Okay,
I wish I knew more about it. All we know is that they did perform there, and that might have been, that was very early. I don't know if I would say it's controversial, but it's something that I have kind of come on is that the Brothers Houdini started in 1893. There's an assumption that it starts in 1891, right out of the tie factory. But I think the Brothers Houdini and Metamorphosis all happen at the same time. It's all 1893.
Well, I don't think they could have gotten into the World's Fair if they're just getting started saying, hey, we got an idea. I mean, they had to have, I would imagine, had an act that they could present to them saying, hey, look, here's what we can do. And somebody bought it. So in other words, they had to be have some level of expertise and notoriety rather than just walking off the streets and, hey, hire us.
They certainly didn't have any notoriety. Mm. I think they probably, you know, good question. How do you get a job at the Chicago World's Fair? I probably just auditioned. And, you know, Metamorphosis is great.
Well, I guess that's true. I mean, you know, there's Wild Bill Hickok and everything else that was there. I mean, it was an amazing thing.
Howard Thurston was there too, apparently. That's apparently where Houdini met Howard Thurston.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. So again, you're working on some other stuff on the blogs, your blog for the next few days. I know that you keep.
Well, wait a minute. Let me go back to the book. So the diary book.
Yes.
You know, tells, you know, the last 2 years of Houdini's struggle. So what I'm doing is I'm just carrying on the way and I'm going to continue to tell the story week by week, engagement by engagement. And as far as I can tell, I think this is going to break down into three volumes that cover about 9 years each. And I've written the first volume. It's 1900 to 1909. And, you know, they're going to be big, beautiful coffee table books and loaded with fabulous photos and essentially, you know, work as a biography, but also work as a research tool. I'm going to absolutely try to tell you where Houdini was every week of his life, what he did, the major events. Yeah.
It's going to be more complete than The Key, I guess.
Well, The Key has a focus on Houdini's methods. And that's what that
for people, by the way, just to say what The Key is, that's a book that was written by
Patrick Cullerton's Houdini, The Key. That's right. Yeah. That's a big, beautiful book. And Patrick's thing is to really focus on Houdini's tricks and the methods. And so that's what The Key is all about. The Key isn't so much of mine's much more of a biography. I don't get into the methods at all because I don't know many of the methods. That isn't my area of expertise. I'm really presenting something that is a chronological biography of his entire life.
And so, yeah, that's going to be taking some time, obviously, to write that all up. Going back then to the blog that you're doing then, when you're saying you're not going to be actually just reprinting that, I'm assuming someone like Bill Kalush would have that in the archives for the Conjurer's archives or Ask Alexander, if they are, it's someplace or will be someplace. I would like to think the same thing with the number of podcasts that are in the archives that I've got then right now will end up someplace rather than being lost in cyberspace.
Well, yeah, I've not really thought about that.
You ought to have that discussion. I've talked with Bill about that, about this, and you should talk to him about yours.
I should. You know what I've just done for myself is there's a website called, is it called SiteSucker? You can actually just run your my blog through this site and it downloads everything into a PDF. And I've actually done that for like every year. So I've got it all on my hard drive as a PDF in case it all disappears. It all exists, but that's purely as an archive. And you know, there was a time where I was thinking, oh yeah, I should do my blog entries as a book. But you know what? No, the blog is really, it's a living thing. You know, it's almost doing research out in the open and sharing and enjoying and digging and outing. I realize, no, this is an online creature. It's different.
People get to share your joy.
The books are more, okay, now that I've done all this research, all this work, I have all these things. The book is much more consolidated. Let's consolidate it all down to the good stuff and what we have. And yeah, right. No, the books, they're different. So I thought, you know what, it doesn't work. I don't want to do a book of my blog. I want to now do books, and those are different animals. But certainly, the knowledge and the information from the blog goes a long ways towards providing content for the books.
I understand what you're saying, though. You want people to share the joy because when you find something, you could almost read the effervescence. It's like, look what I just found, kind of a thing.
It's so much fun. And, you know, and it's helpful because sometimes I'll get halfway there and then you post it and someone will find another piece of the puzzle. And Yeah, no, it's, you know, and that's fun. It's nice because, you know, usually biographers, you know, they, you don't hear from them for 10 years and then they release their book. at least, you know, you're watching me do my research
in real time,
every day in real time. And there's, you know, there's minutiae on the blog that won't necessarily make it into the book too. So.
What kinds of things are you looking at coming up in the near future as far as topics go? Or is that something that you just, I mean, you got to keep at least a few days in advance, but beyond that, are you looking for things or something just falls in your lap? I mean, it comes all different ways, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's completely organic. I don't plan anything. I've got a lot of things kind of pre-written or stuff I'm sort of working on, and I've got some ongoing series. But I never quite know until I'm on the cusp of a week. Like this week, I sort of looked and I said, okay, I'll put this up tomorrow. And this is, you know, there's always one thing that I think, oh, this is sort of the important post of the week. So I'll put that up on Wednesday. Like this Wednesday is going to mark the 100th anniversary of Houdini's second spiritualism lecture. And I've done something special about that. So I'll put that up. No, I just kind of comes, and sometimes it's even a mood thing. Sometimes I just wake up and I'm like, what do I want to see up there? And I sometimes think I'm kind of keen into the universe. Maybe other people want to see that.
One of the things, go ahead.
My big problem is that I shouldn't be posting as much. You know, I feel like if I should give people time to catch up or enjoy some of the work I've done. But if I don't post it, then I get too much of a backlog.
As we start to kind of wrap up over here, I know one of the things that has to do with, since we're talking about this being the anniversary of Houdini's death, and this is the gravesite maintenance. And I know that is something that's an ongoing thing. The Society of American Magicians has an ongoing fundraiser, seems like, always trying to raise some money in order to maintain that. And there's been some vandalism and they've repaired it and whatnot. So I know that John Midgley, who is the president of the Society of American Magicians, national president here this year, is looking at actually making a deck of playing cards. I don't know if you've seen those that he's been working on. He's posted some of the pictures on Facebook, and I just saw recently the one that he had of the Queen of Hearts, which was, of course, his mother. And some other things that just look fantastic. I just think that would be a great project. And I'm sure that you'll be all over that and posting that if that comes about to having been crowdfunded.
Yeah, sure. No, I definitely, I'm always, you know, you want to support a Houdini Gravesite Fund. And it's great that the SAM, you know, worries about that. The person, but it's an emergency. There is a gigantic crack in the bell of the Ixhidra, gigantic crack. That thing is going to crack in half. And when that happens, we've got a real problem. You want to talk about expense. So that crack needs to be fixed. And that crack can be fixed. And that needs to happen soon because—
Yeah, the freezing
winter,
and thawing.
Every winter, water gets in there, freezes, and it makes it a little bit bigger. And pretty soon, that thing is just going to fall off. Mm-hmm. The person that anyone should talk to about this is Dorothy Dietrich at the Houdini Museum in Scranton. She is passionate about preserving the gravesite. You know, they were the ones that restored the bust.
Right.
And they are on it. They are on the case. They know how to fix this. They've got the expertise. They are putting together their own funding. You know, this is about action. And she is ready to take action. And so, and she also heads up, she's part of the SAM, but also, you know, she's willing to go rogue and do it independently.
Right.
As they sometimes do. So anyway, yeah, Dorothy Dietrich at the Houdini Museum in Scranton is someone to talk to about the Houdini grave.
So if people are—
and restoration, because she really, really, I mean, she's the one that's put it into me, the fear of God into me that this thing needs to be fixed and how bad it's getting.
So if somebody wants to find a good place in their will to put some money, if they don't have any heirs or any place else to put it, or has some additional money they would like to designate, this would certainly be a good place for it. It sounds like
it would be. And I think Dorothy, they have formed a fund that, you know, it's more of a charitable fund. I don't know how all this works, but you can take a tax,
look into it, okay.
a tax write-off, whatever. There's ways If you're dying to give someone money, you can do that.
All right. John, it's been wonderful. Thank you very much. This has been lovely. I always like to catch up with you, particularly around this time of the year. Do you have any plans on what you're going to be doing for the seance?
I don't have any plans. If Dorothy and Dick are doing it online, I usually pop in there. It's always a very busy day for me, Halloween. There's always kind of something cooking. There's always some kind of last minute stuff. So no, I just, I'm going to enjoy it. I considered going to Appleton. They invited me to the official seance. And boy, I did consider that because I haven't been to Appleton in a long time. And Appleton is great. And, you know, they've got a museum there that has some scrapbooks that I would like to look at. I considered it. I seriously considered going this year, but I'm on a budget this year. There's a saying in Hollywood, stay alive until 25 or survive until 25, because this is the year where the strikes of last year really hit the industry this year, including the part of the industry that I work in. So everyone's having to live on a budget.
A little more frugal here this year.
Yeah, I'm keeping my head down. I'm writing books.
Well, as we do close, I always, of course, want to know what your magic word is, and I'm not going to accept believe as your word.
I forgot that you do this. Are you not going to accept believe? I think I've done Houdini before. Believe would have been great.
Okay, I'll stick with believe.
I'll say believe. I want to come up with something clever. I don't have anything clever. So the magic word is believe.
I like that. Very good. John, again, thanks very much. Been lovely. And always a pleasure to talk with you. Good luck with the books. I know I say the book is going to be coming out and the other books that'll be forthcoming after that. And also continued good luck with the rest of the blog. And people should go and check it out at wildabouthoudini.com. Right. Each day.
Great.
So for the Magic Word Podcast, you're welcome. That's my good friend, John Cox. This is Scotty out. I want to thank my guest, John Cox, for talking with us here this week and giving us a little update on what Houdini's been up to here recently. And also, I want to mention, by the way, we had recorded this a few weeks earlier than today, obviously. And in fact, when we did, I was not looking at the calendar to see that this podcast would actually be released on Halloween. So that's why I was asking him what he was going to be doing. And I'm sure he's probably going to be joining us on the seance there with Dorothy and Dick here later today. I also want to tell you the music that you've been hearing was something I had created using AI, and that is a little 1920s swing brassy music, the kind of thing I think Houdini might have listened to back during that time in the 20s. So I thought you might kind of like to hear a little bit of that, since this is supposed to be more of a historical kind of an episode. Well, next week we have another exciting guest. We'll start picking things up back where we left off. In fact, whenever I have been attending some conventions, I always like to sit down with a few of my friends and also some new friends and talk about their lives and kind of what's going on in their lives. And I think you'll find next week's episode and our guest to be very interesting. If you would like to know who it is, all you have to do is just subscribe to the pod letter. If you'll go to themagicwordpodcast.com, there you will see a drop down or a pop up that should say subscribe to our pod letter. Please do. That lets you know who's going to be on from week to week and also gives you some suggestions from the archives. And also, if we have any contests running and when we do, you're the first to know in those pod letters. So it's basically just a weekly newsletter that's very brief and to the point. I think that you'll enjoy it. Please sign up for that. And while you're at it, please give us a 5-star rating on whatever kind of a platform you use to listen to these podcasts. It would help our podcast grow. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember to just believe. This is Scotty out.